So there are more activities to come and a bit of an interactivity as well in this second hour. We do appreciate you are staying for another hour here. And what we are going to do today is to bring in various stakeholder voices for curriculum engagement. So now I'm inviting our speakers to the fore, and actually, if Karel is ready, then I'm going to invite Karel as a speaker to join us, because she's going to represent the voice of students, okay? And Karel is going to take a seat by now. And would you join us, Catherine O'Mahony, representing a teaching and learning center, so that part of education. And Valentina is joining us as a lecturer researcher. And I'm coming from a science shop, Corvinus Science Shop of Budapest. I'm not going to have a presentation, but try to hold this space for you, what science shops usually do with various stakeholders. And we are very aware of two things, that these are not all the stakeholders of community engagement, for sure. So we have a limited number of seats here and the limited number of views. However, we would like to also invite yours. So let's test the internet, let's test the Wi-Fi. Let's see whether you can get in. If somebody cannot, no problem. We are going to have moving mics later. But if you have the chance to get into, this is going to be open for the entire, you know, 1 hour for your comments and questions. And I should learn these numbers by heart to tell you at any time, 76, 96, 87, 73. And we are also very privileged to have a support group in the front row, Emma McKenna, Marty Friedrich, and Catherine Bates. This is the sequence, how they sit there. They are going to look at your questions and support us on the way with your thoughts and comments and questions. Okay. The other thing we are very much aware of, that you may not, in teaching, you may not on that side of science shop activity being involved in education. However, when we started to think about this session and also the conference topic, you know, so building and sustaining next generation engagement, I guess it was very clear that we're better to explore this than through curriculum initiatives. And these are your words, Catherine. I don't know whether you have recognized them, but I guess it's a great start. And also when we were thinking about this plenary, actually we came to a very quick conclusion about the context, which was mentioned in this previous presentation as well, that we are in a multi-crisis, a poly-crisis, you know, time. So these sort of heavy topics, as some of us were mentioning them, should be brought in, although we would like to have a very, you know, positive, inspiring opening plenary. But the crisis, as you were seeing in our opening slide, it is, as a contextual element, is there. And what we would like to talk about and explore in the presentations of these three speakers, that how these needs, new and changing needs, could be addressed in higher education, in curriculum development. So, without further ado, I'm going to invite Valentina to the floor. And let me introduce her a bit more. So Valentina works currently as a lecturer and a researcher in Wageningen University. I met her first in an EU project when she conceptualized the pedagogical foundations for something we call the Enrich tool for educators that paves the way towards emancipatory education. And she's an assistant professor in sustainability education at Wageningen University in the Netherlands. Her passion for nature and for people are the two driving forces in her work. And it is towards nature and people that her attention goes, while she reflects with us today on two questions: who are engaging in curricula, and for what purpose? So Valentina, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Live and Knowledge friends and people. I'm looking forward to meeting you more closely in the next days. But for the next few minutes, let me tell you something or reflect with you on the two questions that are standing there. Who are we engaging with in curricula? And for what purpose? So I start with who are we engaging with? So there are two typical participants in the curricula. One is the student and the other one is the educator. And it is through their interaction that the learning process is facilitated. That is what we can call a narrow form of engagement, the typical one. However, nowadays we see a different trend in education and in higher education curricula, a trend toward expanding this model and creating broader forms of engagement with more people, more stakeholders, breaking the walls of academia and crossing the border towards society. And one of the aspects that is underpinning this effort is the recognition that higher education institutions have a responsibility to help responding to the challenges in the world. And given that those challenges are highly complex, very normative, very controversial, we do need more people to come together, to share their needs, their perspectives, to share their values, their worries, their concerns, and to try to come together to some ideas for doing something for those challenges. So the model I'm presenting here, working towards more broader engagement, is a typical model of many forms of educational learning: community-engaged research and learning, problem-based learning, challenge-based learning, service learning, transdisciplinary learning, living labs are examples of such a model. They all have different nuances, but they have in common this core idea that we need to expand the borders of academia and stretch towards society. And this trend, we see it very much nowadays. Let me show one example from a research I'm working on with some of you in this room. This is a project where we try to raise awareness on the value of education in Europe. We have 15 countries working on this research. And we are looking for every country at different levels, a different context of education, from the primary to the higher education, into civil society education. And one of the key questions we try to get a grip on is, what is the state of soil health education in terms of collaboration? And what are the wishes? When it comes to the state, we see across those countries, based on over 150 interviews, 15 focus groups, and a desk study carried in every country, that narrow form of collaboration, the typical educator-teacher, educator-student format I showed you earlier, is still almost 40% of our education. But the majority of educational efforts are towards the expansion of the curricula by including more and more stakeholders, at least one more, maybe two, or even more than that. The next question we try to explore is, what are the wishes? What do we want for the future? And the wishes show that the narrow form of collaboration could be more contained, and there is much more desire to expand the collaboration, to create a broader setup. And this is, soil health education may not be your field, but still, I'm showing this because this is a trend we see, this expansion model, which I just showed here. Now, there is a lot still to do for us in terms not only of how to include more people, but also about the quality of this collaboration. How do we create a fertile soil, as some people, as the earlier presenter was saying, among us? How do we create a fruitful collaboration and relationship? It's something that we still need to learn. And so I hope in the next 3 days we can learn a lot from each other. But now I want to suggest also that there is at least one stakeholder that could, perhaps should, be on the table and often is not. And that's the natural environment, plants, animals, soil, the forest, the air we are breathing right now. This is very often located within the challenges that we try to respond to. So what I am suggesting here is to stretch our imagination for a moment and place it on our table. And by placing the natural environment on our table, we start recognizing that we are all part of a living system. And start to get to know the natural environment. And perhaps this can help us to start connecting more to that environment. This is an example of an exercise I do with my students. It's a game. Some students take the perspective of the river, the blue area. Other students take the perspective of the green space of some species living there. Other students take the perspective of the urban environment, people living there. And by doing so, every student has to connect, has to get to know the characteristic of that forest, of that river, the needs and the possible wishes from that natural environment perspective. And then they start negotiating with each other. And this is an eye-opener for many students. So what I'm saying here is that, yes, we can stretch our imagination, and by taking the perspective of another species, we can get to know that species. And by getting to know that species, we can connect and perhaps start to love that species, because as Dostoevsky used to say, we cannot love what we don't know. And then I go to the second question. For what purpose? For what purpose we are teaching and learning in curricula? Now, in order to address that question, I think we need to first of all reflect on the paradigm, on the set of assumptions you and I and all of us have, on the perspective, on the interpretation we take about the world and about how we function in the world. So currently, we live in a predominant mechanistic paradigm that has many assumptions. Here is an example of two of them. One of the assumptions behind the way we think is that you and I are separate, and you, I, and nature are separate. And a second assumption is that we are thinkers first and foremost. However, those assumptions inevitably not only shape our life, but also shape our curricula, which is conveyed to our students, which then learn without knowing within the same paradigm. So we are practically perpetuating the same thing. So when we consider that we are separate, we inevitably, even if we create a fantastic environment, learning environment of a lot of people and a lot of nice activities, we are still reinforcing the idea of me versus instead of me and. And when we think that we are thinkers first and foremost, we are forgetting that we also have a body and a heart and tend to, therefore, to glorify the mind and devalue the other parts of us that inevitably are there in every learning process. So before I go here, I want to say that when we operate within this paradigm, although we can have a fantastic, as I was mentioning before, learning process in many ways, And students learn a lot and get to know cutting-edge knowledge, they still may not necessarily do well. And this is an example of two of my students, which are excellent students, but they're not doing pretty well. I stay silent so that we can read together those statements in silence. So what to do in those cases? How can we respond to those feelings that play in us? So one way is that we have to rewind our way of thinking and foster a more relational paradigm. Because the crisis we are having is not necessarily a crisis of not knowing enough. It's probably a crisis that we don't know how to best relate with each other and with the world around us. So how about if we conceive an education that focuses on restoring the relationship between us and with nature? And how about an education that restores the split between body, mind, and heart? So I want to suggest, before my conclusion, two aspects that we could embody in the curricula a little bit more with our students. One is to foster insight. Insight about how we think and how we live in the world and the impact that we have in the world and connecting us to our own aspiration and reflecting to what extent are we able to live up to that or not. And this can be done through mindful walks. It could be done through journaling, it could be done to contemplative exercises. The second is sense of belonging, because it is that sense that makes a difference in a group. And even though we are all different and unique in many ways, we face the same struggle. Even if we look good, we have the same dilemmas. So we are actually more unified than we think. So, as I'm approaching the end of my presentation, I want to engage us in a final exercise. And before I tell you what we are going to do, I want to ask you to turn to your neighbor, one person only, and you create a duo. So turn to your neighbor and agree you are partners in this exercise. Agree that you are partners before we start. If I do so, this means silence. Thank you. Now, with your neighbor, you land into the science fiction film Avatar, just for a few seconds. In this film, people greet each other by telling, "I see you." A person looks at the other in the eyes, takes a few seconds, and tells, "I see you." The other person does exactly the same. And by doing so, they try to see each other as full person. So I ask you to engage in that exercise with your neighbor for a few seconds. Please go ahead. Thank you. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you, Rekha, for inviting me.
Thank you, Valentina. Thank you so much.
I see you.
And before I'm introducing Catherine O'Mahony to you, let me direct your attention not only to your neighbor, but also to, you know, to the mentee. If you need the number, it's 7696-8773. And I failed to say that there is also a like option, so you can like the comments or questions you have seen before. But of course, we don't want you to get to virtuality instead of being with us here and now. So try to balance these two activities. So let me introduce Catherine. Catherine works in the Teaching and Learning Center in University College Cork in Ireland. She first connected with the Living Knowledge Network when she met Aileen Martin at the Queen's University Belfast Science Shop more than 20 years ago. From the spark of inspiration through the bringing the model to life in Cork with numerous colleagues, Living Knowledge and its members have been a vital and generous source of support, wisdom, partnership and friendship. So by telling that, let me invite you to the floor.
Rekha, thank you. Thanks. So, hello everyone. I'm here to share a little bit about an approach that we take at University College Cork and a newer institution-wide initiative around curriculum engagement. But first, just to give a little bit of context, this is me and some of my co-teachers and students working with Age-Friendly Cork on a partnership that we did this year. And I'm going to talk about some approaches that we take in the teaching of this module and how it actually supports curriculum engagement. I also want to acknowledge my tremendous colleagues, Ruth Halley, who I've been working in this space for nearly 10 years, and she's presenting at this conference as well, and Kenneth Burns, who is one of the founding members of the Science Shop in University College Cork, both of them working very hard to sustain the next generation of people working in this space. So my first question is why? Why is there a civic turn in higher education? This has been ongoing for quite a while, as Norbert talks about, but in the teaching space, there's a lot of research showing that this is a high-impact educational practice. Valentina talked about the idea of fostering belonging. We know that's really important for students, particularly in the post-COVID world. How do we actually engage interest and foster belonging, but also the development of skills for an unknown future and helping students to understand and find kind of the applicability of what they're learning in more theoretical or policy-driven courses. So they see the relevance of this. Arguably, the work enhances citizenship. It encourages participatory and democratic approaches to knowledge creation, as Norbert talked about, bringing in different types of knowledge and different voices. And it's working towards action-oriented solutions. So how do we respond to both sustainability challenges and opportunities and the other crises that we also are well aware of. So Ostander actually shapes these into kind of these three traditions which echo back the arguments I'm making. But helpfully, she talks about how we can actually do this. And she outlines that teaching for credit, that there's a real importance to structure this into formal programs, not as co-curricular or extracurricular activities. And the strongest argument for that is we know this is highly impactful for students. So if you don't build it into curricula, there's an inequity there. Not all students will have this chance. In terms of the how, reflection is a core aspect of this work, creating space for students to reflect, so to unlearn, to relearn, to learn together. We also need to respond to needs that are identified by the community, so we're responsive to that need, and that we see the community as a vital partner. There's a reciprocity and recognizing the strengths in both areas. So if we're persuaded by purpose, one thing to kind of be aware of, and we were talking about it already, is this gap between this aspiration towards this curriculum engagement and the actual culture that's in higher education. We are very aware of the drive for performativity and targets that are both in the research and teaching space. There's a push towards high impact, costly journals, and the publish and perish model, despite open research, is still prevalent. There's a corporatization of higher education. We're seeing the students as customers in many cases, and there's kind of an economic imperative driving what we do often, and there's poor funding happening in the sector. Sorry, I'm adding to the doom and gloom here, but there's a happy moment too. The rankings can also be added more pressure on institutions to strive for these kind of reputable things, and unfortunately they often are based on more inequity and kind of a disaggregated being able to reach tangible outputs. And then it's what research is fundable gets often the kind of focus and attention, and what teaching is profitable are really oriented towards kind of careers. These are just some of ways of framing and thinking about the higher education context, and to what extent can we actually find space to do this work despite this culture that may be in some places. So one of the things that we do in University College Cork is this module that I mentioned that's in its coming into its ninth year. And we try to use methods that are participatory, that are about having dialogue and working together towards a solution. So here's some examples of us working with different partners. But in terms of methods, we do things like mapping activities. Here we have two people using the world map to literally introduce each other to how a particular topic is being responded to in their context. And this, it was aging and how an aging person is understood and appreciated in different cultural and even country contexts, and what that might do to actually help us imagine a different future around healthy aging. We do things like walking interviews, which can be really lovely ways of opening up communication. We often run this in February, so there's a lot of use of umbrellas. We use art-based approaches and the use of metaphor, because this can be a really helpful way to talk about and think about those intangible things or abstract ideas like power. And it also, I suppose, helps us unlock our own reflections around these topics, which is an important aspect of this work. And finally, dialogue is a crucial part of this, how we bring people together to decide on what we're exploring together and working towards a consensus and an agreed endpoint, and putting facilitation skills, working towards building trust and relationships is a cornerstone of this practice. So that's some of the methods that we're sharing or using in our teaching in this particular module. I mentioned that there's a whole institution approach happening in UCC, and it's called the Connected Curriculum. And this is a way of, I suppose, capturing existing teaching practices, but also trying to put language around the distinctive educational offering for our students. And you might not be able to see, but civic and community engagement is a core part of that now. So we have an institutional kind of prioritizing of this work, which gives us a really strong foundation to build on this. So what does it mean if you have a connected curriculum? Well, in community and civic engagement, we talk about, we ask staff to think about how to bring this in, whether at a light engagement approach or more deeply. So in a light approach, you might try to introduce a topic, maybe frame what you're doing. If it's a main focus of a learning activity, maybe you have a sign shop or something similar. That's a kind of a more structured approach to bringing this in. And then depending on capacity and the suitability of the discipline, or maybe the desired learning outcomes for the students, this might be even more firmly in that kind of participatory space. So those examples of what this looks like in UCC. So you might invite visiting a lecturer to come in to help frame this idea, these ideas coming from a community group, for example. Our child law clinic, our law students work as kind of consultants to design important kind of outputs in terms of new changing legislation. And then this is a resource for whoever wants it. We might engage with our science shop, which is called Carl in Cork. And this is through engaged learning and research. Or we have a kind of a deep model, which is co-inquiry and participatory, which Naomi Machetti at the Cork Migrant Centre is talking about in that video. But We're not all at that point where there's institutional buy-in and there's resourcing and support. Many of us are just starting, and I know a number of you went to the Science Shop workshops yesterday. So what we did was, back in 2008, we started conversations. We brought in people like Henk to act as advocates because we didn't have a voice around this topic. We did small pilots where we shared practical examples and we mentored staff. And we also found ways to leverage policy. And we tried to write this work into institutional strategy, so to embed it as much as we could. We shared and collected stories like we're doing here today. And now we're looking towards how to maintain and sustain, and looking at spaces like our European Universities Alliance, with their focus on challenge-based learning, as a potential space where this work can also continue. But this community is vital in terms of sharing those practices and keeping it to connected. So this is a bit of a starting image to return us to the idea of purpose. So we started out in framing this section about the crises that are going on. And this white line is the business as usual model for higher education, teaching and learning. The animal dung on the road are the crises, the problems, the challenges. Not to diminish them, but to see that they're smelly, they're prevalent, and someone needs to move them, so, or address them. But who is to do that? Do we have the stomach for this work? Do we have the tools to do this work? In terms of who, I think anyone who is teaching can do this. We have opportunity through our teaching to shape curriculum that actually bring in this approach to respond to these crises. How about the tools? Some of them you're going to gain through this conference, but also in terms of my experience, since we've been doing this since 2008, it's actually members of this community who have lent us their shovel and steeled or resolved to actually move this. So I would hope at the end of these few days that you feel insight, you get some practical examples, and that you feel the resolve to go out with your own shovel and help move some of this manure. And the impact in terms of students, in terms of enhanced learning, enriching teaching, is really, really obvious when you're in front of students and experiencing it, and especially our community partners. But don't take my word from it. Here's some feedback from our students from this year. And as Ronald Barnett said, if the curriculum is a vehicle for changing human beings, I would argue that it needs to be the vehicle for enacting positive social change, so that all students can have the opportunity for some experience of this, but also it's a way for the institution to actually respond to and repair relationships with our community partners and be actors in trying to respond to these broader challenges. So thank you for your attention. This is my contact details if anyone wants to follow up on what I've shared. But I first want to lose us into a small interaction to just kind of give us a framing for how we're going to best make use of these few days. And that is this. So Valentina, had you find a pair or maybe a trio. So I want you to first think, maybe you want to write, maybe note on your phone, what is one thing you hope to learn from this community, the Living Knowledge attendees, and bring back to your future work. So. Okay, I think we have that. And now I want you to share it with the person next to you and make a commitment to go and find that information or that practice example. Okay. Thank you. So, thank you all.
What did I make?
Okay. That's okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, that's a good sign.
So if you were able to share, then we may thank Catherine for her presentation. And let me encourage you to use the Menti for your comments and your questions. There are questions coming in, but we have the chance to receive more. And fundamentally, we didn't only ask you now, but we sought to bring in, the idea of those who were coming to the Science Shop Summer School and what are their, hopes for this conference. So Roberto, could you start the video? You will see this in 3 minutes. 5 faces you can get along, first timers at the Living Knowledge. So can we have the video?
Hello, I'm very excited to participate in my first Living Knowledge conference, and I'm looking forward to getting to know all of you and to building connections with the people and the research groups who are working with community-engaged research throughout the world. I'm interested in learning more about the possibilities and the methodologies for engaging different stakeholders, especially considering the different realities that we have in developing and developed countries. I am also hoping to share with you a little bit of our experience about the challenges and the opportunities that we have for working with communities in Brazil, especially within the public sector.
So this is my first time coming to a Living Knowledge conference, and I'm so excited to be back in Europe. I actually completed my PhD in the UK about a year ago, so I'm excited to be back in the area and to learn about everything going on in the world of community-engaged research and learning. One issue that I'm very interested to explore during this conference is around community data. I work very closely with environmental justice groups in Atlanta, and these groups often use data to drive grassroots and policy actions. So there are a lot of different threads to explore within community data. One of importance is community ownership of data sets. So something that I've seen is that even if researchers work with communities to generate data, this data isn't always stored or communicated in ways that are accessible or useful to the community, and often it isn't even owned by the community. So I think this is a really crucial piece to address.
I suppose what I'm really looking forward to is learning the role and the impact that community-engaged research and learning could play in serving marginalized and vulnerable community groups. Being a person of refugee background myself and having worked a lot with refugee and migrant groups, as well as the LGBT community and the sector overall, I'm also interested in seeing how could community-engaged research and learning possibly promote multiculturalism, as well as equip students with the skills to undertake ethical community-engaged research. Being a young person myself, I'm really excited to see how the next generation sort of aspect will be tackled in this conference.
It's not easy just to make people engage with these very abstract concepts like quantum chemistry. So I can share with you what I've been doing in the last years, but what I would like to learn during this conference is how can do engage society with this very basic research that is not very related to health, to environment, and all these maybe more friendly issues in that.
I am very excited to be joining the Living Knowledge Conference. It will be my first time. I look forward to forging meaningful partnerships and collaborations with colleagues working in the community-engaged research space. Hope to see you soon.
So David, they are here in the room. And they are 5 of the summer school participants, and you can meet them along the way in the conference, but also in the final plenary, because this was one of the ideas we developed with Emma McKenna and Catherine Bates to overarch the plenary. So they were introducing their hopes and learning points at the beginning, and we will hear their reflections in the final plenary on Friday. So they were mentioning Next Generation, and we are circulating around students as well, and as I see, some of the questions are about that. So let me now introduce a former student, Karel, who is an urbanist, spatial planner, and historian. By studying at Ghent University, he had the chance to attend the student-led sustainability summer school, a transformative educational experience that ignited his journey into climate justice activism. In gratitude to the community that offered him both valuable insights and friendships, he later coordinated the most recent successful edition of the Green Office Summer School, now focused on climate justice and degrowth. And I should have shown your picture in the meanwhile, so it follows like now. So Karel, could you please come here and thank you.
Thank you for that very kind introduction, Rekha. So from one summer school to the next, you've held your attention for almost 2 hours, so I'll try to keep it short. Valentina and Catherine have discussed how to foster engagement with communities and also society at large during times of crisis through higher education experiences. And I want to build on this by sharing an example of an educational experience I hold very close to my heart, and that's the Green Office Ghent student-led summer schools. And these summer schools are a recurring project of the Green Office of Ghent, which I don't know if you know the concept, but it's a place where students, staff, and volunteers alike work together to make the university a more sustainable place. And important is that we employ a strong definition of sustainability, so not only ecological matters, but also social justice. And so these summer schools all follow a similar model. Just before the start of the academic year, around 50 students from various backgrounds attend a week-long intensive program focused on a pressing socio-ecological issue. And the program is really packed with lectures, workshops, excursions, and very important, delicious vegan meals. And we really try to take the university outside of its walls. And not only that, we also try to bring in outside voices, artists, civil society members, activists, and we try also to pay attention to diversity. And we found this to be a challenge when picking our very enthusiastic guest lecturers. We try to incorporate this diversity that is surrounding us, and it's challenging, but we've found it to be very enriching. And every time, every summer school that we've had, one student takes the lead on organizing this week, with support from other students, also researchers and staff, but it's really the student-led model, and the feedback from the students from the last years informed in the new program. And so the first one was actually really interesting, because it was organized by an engineering student who was hearing on the news that climate crisis has to be solved by engineers and people should not strike, young people should not strike, but they should go to school. But he was in this school and he noticed that there was barely any attention to this climate crisis. So he went to the rector and asked for money, and that's how this program was born. And since then we've had several editions on climate, but also on climate justice and degrowth, on animal welfare and on diversity and inclusion. And really the overarching goal of these summer schools is to offer interdisciplinary, student-led, critical and engaged education outside the curriculum, because often there's not place to really deeply engage with these topics in the current curricula. And in that we pay special attention to the learning process. because this is a really intense week. Students are bombarded with information. So, for example, last time, we ensured that there was really ample room for reflection as well, with the goal of sparking discussions between these students with various academic, ethnic, geographic backgrounds. And part of that means really good timekeeping, so being really strict with the lectures, although they have very interesting things to say, we keep it short. Another part is a bit unconventional, removing the lecture from the room after the Q&A, and to allow for a more open, more free discussion between the students. And finally, we also organize small group or even individual reflections to support different learning styles. And we've also taken many steps on making this experience accessible for all. We're not there, not at all, but we've taken steps. And one key part is, since that the topics that we discuss, most notably the climate crisis, they are often not only intellectually challenging, but also carry a heavy emotional layer, especially for the young people attending. And so a key part of our approach is creating a safe, inclusive space where emotions and this personal layer is welcomed, actually. And it's not held off and not seen as not academic or not valuable, but it's welcomed and engagement is encouraged. And one method of creating this space of belonging, which links back to what Valentina and Catherine said, is this set of rules, of which you see a very summarized view here. And so we go through these rules at the start. We really take our time, and we keep them visible throughout. And we notice that students really value this layer, this personal layer, and that it leads to very strong bonds being formed. And some students tell us, I'm picking a different career path because of this. Others feel empowered to organize. One student or a group of students actually started a new student association on animal welfare, and others have taken it onto themselves to hold the university accountable for its impact on the climate crisis. So, lessons learned. We've drawn many lessons from these experiences. First of all, students are yearning for education on sustainability, and really, these are urgent, complex socio-ecological issues. We often call them wicked issues. And interdisciplinarity, critical thinking, collaboration really helps to address these issues. And in that, building on that actually, student-led education, so giving the students really the floor to organize their own learning experience, is very well suited to this challenge, and also students love it, so that's great. And finally, experimentation pays off, and students feel empowered to take action. So I think that's about the greatest learning outcome you can have. And I could keep on going for hours, but I'll leave you with this lovely bell hooks quote, which brings us back to Valentina's earlier exercise. As a classroom community, our capacity to generate excitement is deeply affected by our interest in one another's voices, in recognizing one another's presence. So thank you all for your attention. I hope you find it inspiring, and now I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you, Coral. And now we are turning to the very final minutes of this session, which also takes you to the front, like, you know, mentee and questions. And there was one very popular here, I guess Coral already has given an answer to it, which was like, I recognize the disillusionment and hopelessness of students and young people. What can we do about that? And I guess we have just heard a sort of an answer, but do you wish to add to it?
Is that on? I think the best way to combat kind of eco-anxiety is actually to feel like you're making small changes. So I think it's actually responding to it and creating space for students to show leadership like that and bringing them into things.
And if actually we would like to invite you to have questions here as well, so we can clearly take at least one question from the audience. So if you have a question, could you please raise your hand, and we have people to get to you with a mic. So that's an option too. And while you are getting there, actually quite many thumbs up are with the question that, how did you leverage policy? And I guess it is going to you, to your presentation, Catherine.
At a national level, there was a strategy for higher education, which has been heavily critiqued, but it did call out this kind of work. And I suppose we also leveraged European policy to say, this is the change initiative that's coming through. And we brought it to the attention of different people, and we actually brought the heads of four colleges together to say, with Henk presenting, to say, can you please fund us? Then the economic crisis hit, and we still kept leveraging policy, but we had no money. So you just have to constantly keep reframing. Different policies will have different, like quality assurance, the idea of student-centered approaches can be another lever. Translating policy to find your purchase point, I think, is the point.
Thank you, and I'm still inviting you here, although I know we are end of a two-hour plenary, so it might be not that inviting anyhow. But if you are not asking on the spot, maybe I'm giving the word to you. Sorry, Carol.
Maybe if I can return to the previous question. I think a major part of dealing with students' eco-anxiety in higher education is universities stepping up and doing what is their duty. I really like this quote of, with the privilege of knowing comes the duty to act. And too often we have to be really honest about this. Universities are not doing enough to deal with the climate crisis. I've seen it in Ghent, and I've also heard it in many other places. And this is a key part. You can educate all you want, but if the university is not doing itself what is needed, then people will stay anxious.
Wow, that sounds really good. I mean, the knowing and the acting part. So then, since we are very close to the end, I'm trying to get to somewhere which is gives us a final mentee moment. If Marty, I can ask your help for that. And the mentee moment here could be something which you are writing in, or if you have any difficulties in getting into, it's good if you are thinking about. Because, you know, we were talking about crisis, bringing that in, and actually this is a conference which would like to be going to a more optimistic and action-oriented, inspiring way. So at the end of this two-hour session, but especially in the final 1 hour, would you just please think about that, what is the positive, optimistic take away point for you, which you are moving on to the conference. So it is not, I'm not thinking about a very general takeaway, but how do you enter the coffee break and the next sessions afterwards? What is your optimistic take on that? So I'm giving you a second. Answers are coming in. And don't feel excluded if you somehow didn't get to the mentee. We can talk about that into the break. Okay, there are loved ones, likes are coming in, there is agreement. And Roberto, yeah, thank you for moving it. So, I'm so happy to read it, I cannot even give voice to them, sorry for that, but reading it. And it seemed to settle right now. So if you had the chance also to look at others, you can have some inspiration from those. And in the meantime, I was also informed by our support group that we have received a lot of compliments about your presentations, dear speakers, and I would like to thank that.